Okay. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is a Tuesday, 26th December 2017. So today is our last Tuesday class for the year 2017. So we will do something different. We will not follow the original book, the Buddha and his teaching, but today we will delve on one question by the Kayanamita that was sent out, I think, today, this morning, regarding Western philosophy and also the J. Krishnamurti code, which is, I think, very important, very beautiful. I didn't really read the detail of Western philosophers until after that Krishnamurti code came out. Then the Kayanamita asked, she got it mixed up. So I went and read up a bit. I think it should be interesting for you all to develop the understanding. After I will share them, I have written some of their famous sayings. J. Krishnamurti call it quote, they call it their famous saying. So we will compare and develop the understanding, because these are very early philosophers who have very great ideas. Then they also have wisdom. Because of that, they are different from normal people. And if you read the English dictionary, the meaning of philosopher or philosophy is very, very beautiful. They define philosopher as somebody who loves truth, lover of truth. When we talk about what we love, we think of boyfriend, girlfriend, our people whom we like. But this philosopher only loves truth. That's why Krishnamurti, in his quote, he put, philosopher are lover of truth, not lover of thought. Big difference. Lover of thought, big problem. Lover of truth, very wise. After that, I will explain them. So before that, maybe we will compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, then our spiritual zeal, virya, then develop mindfulness to commence the puja chanting, followed by puja recitation. Okay. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Mila Fo. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Pusen Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuto Bhagawan. Butang Bhagawan Tang Abhiwademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page 1 of our chanting book. Then there are 2 new books for you. They are for free distribution. The books are printed, donated by all Kayanamita funds. It's based on the transcript of the recorded talk given by me. They are lesson 2 and lesson 3 of the 6 Patria Platform Sutta, which we started, I think, over a year ago. Now we are at lesson 50, 55 or 64 or 65, I can't remember. So these are the early sharing. Then somebody volunteered to transcribe them. Then in between, you earlier on already received some later lesson. These are the script that they have the faith after listening to recording. Then some Kayanamita volunteer to transcribe them. They are lesson 30. I forgot whether 36 or 38. Then there's a lesson 46. These are all very good. Then there's a lesson 54 coming. Then so far, the transcript, I think they have transcribed the draft for me until chapter 11. But I only managed to finish chapter 3. Then I think 4 is finishing, so I should send it out for proofreading. Then after that, slowly, we will get them printed so that you can have the benefit of having the hard copy instead of just listening to the recording. The hard copy will help you a lot because you can mark them with your marker pen and you don't need to re-listen to the recording. Whatever you don't understand, you mark it down, then you can ask and we can discuss it further. And these are very good Dhamma sharing topics that arise on the Shakespearean platform sutta. Okay, now turn to page 1. We will continue with the puja chanting. We will start with Vandana. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dityampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dityampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dityampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Sura meraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Okay, now we are chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganna sarpa dithena dipena tamadang sena tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang. Ganda sambara yutena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana mutamang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena Punnena matena cha hotu mokang Pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata vinasa vawang Adi vase tu no bante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tu no bante Pale parikapetang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivase tu no bante Bojana parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan tumutamang Now turn to page 5. We shall chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of these various puja offering significance. So first item is significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of pure clear water. May this offering of pure clear cool water lead us to the pure clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Then, significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, siddhi, samadhi, and panya be fully strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect, Triple Jam. Vedang Pujayami Dhammang Pujayami Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we can have about half an hour meditation. Okay, we will off the light. Then you all can have your meditation. For those who are new or who may need instruction, I will give you some short instruction. Thank you. those who find they are like painful or because of age, you can sit on a chair or rest your body against a couch. Whatever posture that make you comfortable, you can use them. You don't have to force yourself into a posture that makes you difficult to develop the meditation. So any posture, it can be cross-legged, sitting on the floor, or relaxed state of mind and body while sitting on a chair. The only thing you need to be mindful of is when you lie yourself, lean against a cell, against a couch or a chair, or you lie down on a couch, try to maintain attentiveness or mindfulness so that you don't doze off or sleep. But if you are very tired, you want to relax your body and mind, then you want to rest and recuperate, you can, but maintain awareness as far as your mind can allow you to develop them. If you're really tired, you want to sleep, you can sleep. But if you have mindfulness, you don't worry. At the moment your snoring start, the first vibration that come out of the snoring, you will be aware. Then you can address it there. And the awareness is what you're supposed to have during meditation. So that is the mind state without the thought, but it is just aware, silent. So every time it falls into that unconscious, going into the unconscious to sleep, then the body tend to have this snoring because of the way the air is being released out. They face some form of constriction or what, then you will hear a vibration or a snoring sound. Then if you are mindful, you will be aware. So no problem. The moment you are aware, you're silent again. Then you maintain that silence. That's how you train your mind in meditation. So there are two parts to meditation. The first part is just to train your mind to be aware, mindful, so that it's not heedlessly lost in the thinking or in the thought process. When you are heedlessly thinking or lost in the thought process, you cannot meditate, you cannot be peaceful. The Buddha called this the heedless thinking mind, the untrained mind. This untrained mind, because it's not trained, it thinks a lot. It is heedless. And the reason for it is because of the mental hindrance. There are five mind states that the Buddha called mental hindrance. They hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. The reason why it happened is because you lack the opposite five spiritual faculty that will allow you to understand spiritual teaching and develop the meditation. They are your Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya. These are Pali words. The English translation is Saddha is faith, faith in the Buddha and his teaching through an understanding, not blind faith. Then this Virya is a tenacity, a spiritual zeal or tenacity to go this way because you see the beauty of it, you see the importance of it, you understand that the Buddha Dhamma is very important. The Buddha himself is so wise. He is the wisest and the most virtuous being ever to be born because of his long period of cultivation. He has been cultivating this meditation or meditative training for eons and eons of lifetime, lifespan. And because of that, he was able to perfect all of his virtue and wisdom that enable his nature to realize Sammasambuddhahood. That's why he's called the Sammasambuddha, the all-knowing Buddha. perfect in wisdom and virtue. So this faith and virya or spiritual zeal is very important to drive you to cultivate. So when the faith and the virya is there, you will tend towards the meditation. Then the third spiritual faculty will arise, because when you train your mind, it will develop this silent mind or meditative mind. The Buddha called it sati, mindfulness. When you are just aware without thought, that is sati, that is just being aware, mindful, attentive. So the first part of meditation is just to train your mind to be aware, to be attentive, to be in this relaxed state of mindfulness. So whatever thought arises, let it arise. It will cease to be. Then if you are attentive enough, mindful enough, slowly, slowly this thinking will slow down. Then silence will return. Yeah, this is your original state of mind before the mental hindrance stir your mind to have the mental hindrance. The mental hindrance are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or sleepiness of mind. Then the other one is restlessness of mind. Your mind is very restless, think a lot because it has a lot of attachment, a lot of worry, anxiety, fear, problems, unresolved issues. So all this will cause the mind to be restless. Then the last one is doubt. When you are doubtful without the understanding, this mental hindrance will arise. Then you don't have confidence. That's why without sadha, your mind state collapse, break down. So this is why we have to train this mind. So as I explained, there are two parts to it. First part is just to train this mind to be aware. Then the second part is to stabilize this awareness until the meditative mind can arise for you to meditate. So the training of this mind, we also have some skillful means to help you. If your spiritual faculty are still not developed yet, means your mental hindrance is taking hold. So this mind has this mental hindrance that will cause you problem. That's why you cannot meditate, because the mental hindrance will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness with the inner awareness. That's why you cannot meditate. So what we need to do is, we will teach you a technique or a skillful means to decondition the heedless thinking. We call it the mind sweeping method. You just listen attentively and follow the instruction to meditate. I will guide you along. First, relax body and mind, completely relax. Make sure your backbone is more or less straight. Then just breathe in, breathe out normally. Then close your eye. Maintain attentiveness or attention at your forehead. Just feel, don't think, feel. Feel your forehead. If you can detect any tension, any tightness, or any stress within your forehead, you just silently relax into it. Just relax, relax, and relax. Feel it soothingly relaxed. Then you sweep your mind down to your facial muscle. Before that, you can feel your eye muscle. Sweep it down to your eye and just feel again like how you feel your forehead. Now you feel your eye muscle. If there is any stress within, tension or tightness, you just relax it. Feel it soothingly. Relax, relax, and relax every strand of your eye muscle. Then you sweep it down to your facial muscle. Again, you feel, no thinking, just feel. Feel them soothingly relax. Then in order to help you to relax further, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, you are in a state of joy, happiness. That's why you naturally relax. So that smile will make you happy, peaceful, joyful. Then your facial muscle will just relax by itself, because there is this joy in you. There is this radiant smile in you. Then you radiate this love or metta to yourself to bring about inner well-being after developing the inner peace. You can recite following what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. When you recite, you have to feel it with your feeling. When you say, may I, this body and mind, you must feel your entire body and mind, all the cells within. Be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being in each and every cells within your body and mind. Then the joy and the happiness. So this well-being will develop positive energy. Then we continue to radiate loving kindness to this body. May this body and mind of mine too be free from all suffering, free from all mental and physical suffering. May it too be free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy and kindness and goodness within our mind states. Then we can radiate the same love and metta to all your loved ones. May my loved ones too be well and happy, well and you can visualize them and radiate this well-being and happiness to them with a radiant smile. And wish them well-being and happiness too. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it too keep itself happy and peaceful always. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be well and happy, well and happy. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace deep within their mind states. Then we can continue to radiate this loving kindness of metta to all beings within this vicinity. May all kayanamita within this vicinity, and may all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may their mind states too be beautiful. Then may their body and mind too be free from all harm and danger, free from all physical and mental suffering. Then may there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this loving kindness to all beings. May all beings within the whole of SS2, Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, and all the other beings within the solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, and all beings within the entire universe, known and unknown, seen and unseen, be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be free from all form of suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they always keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you have to maintain this mind state of calmness, peacefulness, and silence. Because when you just feel and relax, you will be peaceful. Then we continue with our mind sweeping method. We will return to our facial muscle, feel, relax every part. Then after that, you sweep it down to your neck, feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you sweep it down to your heart, your chest area. You feel, just like you feel your forehead, feel. If there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just relax into it. You can detect your heartbeat or any vibration within your heart area. That will be very good. Then you just silence your mind completely and just stay with the heartbeat or the vibration. If you are new and you are not sensitive enough, then it's okay. You can just relax, relax, and relax every part of your heart or chest area. Feel it suddenly relax. Then you sweep your awareness down to your stomach. Feel. Again, relax. Sweep it down to your abdomen. Feel. Again, relax. Then your leg. Feel. Relax. Then you can feel your buttock. Again, relax. Then you can reverse this mind sweeping method. From the buttock, feel. Relax. Silent. Then feel your leg. Relax. Silent. Then move your attention up to your abdomen, feel, relax. Then your stomach, feel, relax. Then when you come to your heart area, same, silence everything and just feel. Don't do anything. You can detect your heartbeat or any vibration, just stay there, silent, and meditate. If you can't, you continue to relax and sweep it up to your shoulder. Feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Then back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then move it up, sweep it up to your neck, feel, relax. Then your facial muscle, feel, relax every part of it. Then your eye muscle, feel, relax every part of it. Then your head, forehead. Just feel and relax every part of it. By now, you should have developed the calmness, the peacefulness of mind, the silent mind, which is the meditative mind. Now you have to stabilize this mind so that it can develop the meditation properly. So to stabilize this silent mind, you have to develop a meditation object to anchor your mind, your awareness, so that it does not run, so that it's not heedlessly lost in thought. So the best object of meditation is the one recommended by the Buddha. He said, our breath, which we breathe in and breathe out every moment, is the best object of meditation. You should anchor your mind there so that the mindfulness will develop. Mindfulness respect to the in and out breath. The Buddha called this training Anapanasati. Anapanasati is the training of the mind to be aware of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So Anapanasati is the training of the mind to be aware of the in and out breath. And this is very simple. Like you feel your forehead now, instead you maintain attention at your nostril area. You just silent everything and just feel. The moment the mind detects the breathing, then you allow the mind to move with the feeling. Then as per the Buddha's instruction, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Means our awareness and the breath move as one in perfect harmony and synchrony without any word, without any verbalization. It's just the awareness moving in and out. So if you can train your mind this way, your mindfulness will develop. It will stabilize. Initially, for those who have not trained, you will come to a realization that this mindfulness of the in and out breath is not easy. When the mental hindrance are there, you will drift away. Split second, you realize the mindfulness is gone. Then a chain of thought will arise. So the moment you are aware that you are not mindful, you have been heedlessly thinking or lost yourself in the proliferation of thought or thinking, then you remind yourself, I am here to train my mind. Then just bring this mind back to the nostril area to maintain that mindfulness, the awareness. So every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, you bring it back to maintain mindfulness. Not long, if you are patient enough, this mindfulness will develop and stabilize. Yeah. Then you will like to meditate, because when you can do that, when sati is established, mindfulness is established without the thought, you become peaceful, you become calm, and you experience a type of mind state which they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual blissfulness, or they call it spiritual joy or spiritual calmness. Sometimes the calmness can become so engulfing, it will give rise to a type of rupture. You feel like the mind enters rupture. The piti will make you feel very good, very calm. Then as you continue to develop the anapanasati, relax into it, this piti will become more and more refined. Then it will transform further to become sukhang or sukha. Sukha is a more refined state of piti. Some call it the spiritual blissfulness of mind. Your mind enters a state of blissfulness. You feel very blissful. You feel very good. Real bliss inside. But you have to relax into it and silence everything. So that this state of blissfulness of sukha will still be transformed further to become very, very quiet and very still. We call that mind state the tranquility of mind or the stillness of mind. In Pali, it's called pasati. That is the sole purpose of the training of this mind, to realize pasati. And pasati is the tranquility of mind or stillness of mind or the silent mind, which is just aware without thought. When this state arises, do not panic. Do not go and do any other type of meditation. You just silence everything and stay with the awareness. Just be aware. Then this pasati, when you hit them, your breath become very subtle, very still, like no more breathing. It's like you cannot follow it anymore, because your mindfulness has not developed to that sensitivity. So when you continue to relax into all those mind state of piti and sukhang, then you just silence everything and just stay with the silent mind. Even the subtle breathing, later on, when your mind enters sati, you will come to realize that this refined mindfulness can be aware of the subtle breathing, the little or no breathing. Then later on, when it develops into internal breathing, you will also understand. So the first part of meditation is to train your mind to be completely silent, still, tranquil, in a free mind state. That is the stability of mindfulness. Then later on, you have to stabilize this mind state until it will follow you throughout the day, in the midst of life. Then when you are in the sitting posture form of meditation, whatever movement or activity that arises within your physical form and mind, it will be like magnified. And you become very sensitive. You can feel them, all your vibration within your body. You don't need a stethoscope to listen to your heartbeat. You just send your mind there, aware, silent everything. It will detect the heartbeat by itself. then wherever you locate this mind, it becomes very sensitive. So this mind that enters sati is the meditative mind. This is the mind that can understand many things. So silence everything and just use it to meditate. Then because we are a human being, we have a physical body with all the basic senses, the five major senses. We have the ear, the eye, the nose, the tongue, and our body, tactile. So upon contact of mind with any of the sense data, like vibration that imprints your hearing, your ear membrane, it will be transformed into a hearing consciousness. Then the mind can be aware of that consciousness. Similarly, the smell, the taste, the tactile. And also when you are meditating with your eye open, you can also see things. Even when you are with your mind closed, you can also see mental images and all those things. Their mental states, you can be aware of them. So all this within your capability. Yeah, this mind that is in sati is very sensitive. It can understand many, many things. So you just silence your mind and just let that mind be aware. Develop the meditation. Then you will experience all of the essential Dhamma that the Buddha talked about within your own form and mind. The Four Noble Truths, the Three Evil Roots, the Five Spiritual Faculties, the Five Mental Hindrances, Seven Factors of Enlightenment, etc. The Dependent Origination, all those things, you will start to see them and understand them. So this silent mind, which is a meditative mind, can insight into phenomena and develop a lot of understanding. So these are the simple instructions that you need to understand to develop the meditation. Okay, now I will let you meditate. If you need to train, you train. For those who really know how to meditate, you just silent and develop the understanding. I will ring the bell in about 5 or 10 minutes so that you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out, meditation. And we can continue with our invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6. We shall chant the invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho. Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanayiko pachatang veditatbo vinohiti supatipano bhagavato sakkasango ujupatipano bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Nyāya Patipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Sāmīci Patipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Yatidaṃ Cattari Purisa Yogāni Atta Purisa Pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sango Ahuneyo pahuneyo dakeneyo Anjali karaniyo Anutarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple jam. Buddhang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. Like just now I mentioned, tonight we will not continue from the usual topic, the Buddha and his teaching. So Hui Rong can rest one more week. No need to share this week. We will instead share the question asked by one of the Kayamita. Today on the My Kayamita website, I will read to you. It's a Jai Krishnamurti quote. It's very beautiful. So this Jai Krishnamurti quote is not easy to comprehend, but I believe some Kayamita who has developed the cultivation, they will understand. And it's very beautiful. I will first read to you the question, followed by what this lady asked. So I sent out a Jai Krishnamurti quote. I think 1 or 2 days back, I sent to all Kayamita. I said, "Dear Kayamita, below is a very good and rather meaningful daily quote on what is true by Jai Krishnamurti for sharing by all. Please read through it attentively to develop the clear understanding of this wonderful quote." So there is a link where you can click on it and understand what that truth or quote is. So the title of the Jai Krishnamurti quote is "What is Truth?" I think as spiritual cultivator and religious people, we will be very interested in this question of what is truth. So according to Krishnamurti, this is very beautiful, you listen. When the mind realizes the limitation, the narrowness, the finiteness of thought, see, he begins this way, then only it can ask the question, "What is true?" Then he asks you, "Is this clear? Are you clear or not? Yeah? Can I have some response? Do you understand what he means? Yeah? Anybody don't understand?" I should ask the other way around. Anybody understand? Huh? No handout. So whether you understand, at least Mimi sister is very good. Don't understand, put out the hand. So I presume the rest understand. Anybody who still don't understand? Oh, very good. Yes, the rest understand. So I explain for you. You see, when the mind realizes, this word is very important. It's not a knowledge, you know. When you realize the limitation, the narrowness, and the finiteness of thought. So what is the meaning of limitation? You know what is limitation, is it? Yeah? There is a limit to what you can do with thought. Do you understand that? Your thought has its own limitation. Then it also has its finiteness. Yeah. Then the other aspect is, he used the word very narrow. Narrow means whatever that is within the field of thought is really, really something very small compared to consciousness, awareness. And you know what is a thought or not? Yeah? Do you know how you create thought? You have been living life for the last how many years? Depending on your age. Some maybe 40-something, 50-something. Some maybe 60-something. There are some young ones too. So we have been using thought for so long. What actually is thought? And how do you create thought? Because you are expert in it. You have been using thought for so long. So how did you create thought? And what is thought, basically? Yeah? What is thought? Anybody want to try? Put up your hand. I pass you the mic. Yeah? Come. Nobody want to try. So, what do you want? You want me to tell you? You have to try. Don't worry about right or wrong. Eh? Anybody want to try? Yeah. Good, PJ. Thank you. Yeah, you try.
Yeah. Okay, from my understanding is, especially when your answer, your senses, what's the word I should use? I think you use the word engage, and your consciousness arise, and of course it triggers off your memory, and that's when your thoughts will come.
Very good. Sadhu, sadhu. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So you come to know that as a human being, we have the senses like what I mentioned just now, our five physical senses. Your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, and your bodily tactile. Then you have a mind, which is your consciousness. Upon contact, when you engage with the world, engage means what? You are involved, engage. So the famous question that we should inquire on or ask ourselves is, how do we know the world? Have you ever asked yourself that question? How do you know the world? How do you interact with the world? Very easy question there. How do you know your world? How do you know my voice? Through what? Through your senses, your hearing consciousness, you perceive it. That's how you know my voice. Through your seeing consciousness, you can see whatever that is within the field of vision. That's why color, shape and form, light and sound, all this become conscious to you. This is how you know the world. Through your senses, your smell, your taste, your tactile, the weather, hot and cold. So this is how you know the world. Then when you know how you know the world, how do you interact with the world? You have to arise the speech, the action, and the thought process. So basically, it's the six sendo, together the consciousness, that engage with the world, the phenomenal world. Then thought arise. So, like PG mentioned, which is very good, every time we make contact, we become conscious. Take for example, conscious of what we see or what we hear. Then, what follows? He knew, because she saw in the meditation, memory follow. So through memory, you perceive what you see or what you hear. Then that memory is the content of consciousness that went in. So your memory is full of what? Views, opinion, and conditioning. Belief system. Your fear, your phobia, your insecurity. And sometimes it's your good moments in life. All of the memories, good and bad, you carry them. Your views and your opinion. So when you perceive something through either your seeing consciousness or your hearing or smell, taste, tactile or thought consciousness, you will react and stir according to your views and opinion. That's why your thought will arise. Whether this thought is wholesome or unwholesome depends on the person who input the content. If you don't have wisdom, you will input a lot of wrong content. Then it will lead to the wrong thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed is basically selfishness, covetousness, desire, lust, craving, wanting things your way, your attachment, your clinging, your grasping. This is what greed is all about. Then anger is your hatred, your negative mind state, your violence, your envy, your jealousy, your unhappy mind, your dislike, your aversion, all of the negativity of thought, your cunningness, your deceitfulness. And all these are part and parcel of greed and hatred. Then there is one evil root which they call delusion. When you are deluded, you will arise fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, because you don't understand. That's why your mind state get caught in all this. So basically how you create thought is, if you meditate, you will understand. Or according to the Buddha, our mind is very, very different. Our mind, before the thought arises, is just spacious awareness, the true mind that is one with everything, the oneness nature, just aware. But the moment thought comes in, what does it do? You need to have contact with your senses, isn't it? Upon contact, consciousness arises. Then within that moment, that consciousness, like the physics experiment, upon contact means the switch is on, the light bulb lights up. The lighting up of the light bulb is just like the conscious moment. You are just conscious of what you see, or what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, or what you tactilely feel or think. So that conscious moment, the Buddha said, in the seeing is just that consciousness. There is no one to see. Because the content hasn't gone in yet. There is the pure awareness, the spacious awareness, seeing things as they are, without the words, without the concept, just that reality. But most human beings are deluded. They are not mindful. They are not aware. They cannot stop. They straight away through memory. They will perceive it according to their memory, their views, their opinion, their conditioning, their belief system, their fear, their phobia, or whatever, insecurity and all those things. So what happened is, the moment this thing happened, the content went in. So when the content went in, you look at this whiteboard. I have to draw it out, otherwise not easy for you to understand. It's okay, thank you. You see, let's say this is spacious awareness. This whiteboard, the whole thing is just spacious awareness. The moment you become conscious through your senses, either seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, or tactile, or thought consciousness, you input your content, means you perceive that thing. So this space, instead of a spacious awareness, zoom into a finite point. So this finite point is like when you perceive the Buddha image, see, your thought is here, understand? Or you perceive my voice. Your consciousness shrink and just become this part. So this is how thought arises. So from a spacious awareness, it shrink to a space where the thought receives its content of consciousness. So this content of consciousness is what you put in. These are your views and opinion. Content of consciousness. I think I put short form. Content of consciousness. So this content of consciousness creates the thought. So it's the empty space within the awareness where the content went in and poof, it become a thought. You understand? So this thought compared to the spacious awareness, which is narrow. Definitely the thought is narrow, is it? And the thought is limited to this with its content. The whole of awareness, the spacious awareness, is gone. Your true nature, gone. Your true mind, gone. You are lost in thought. The whole consciousness shrink, become a point. That is the meaning of Krishnamurti's quote. He said, now I repeat, then you will understand. Because people want to know what is truth. So he explained what is truth to you. When the mind realizes, means you in the meditation see how you create thought, then you realize the limitation, the narrowness, and the finiteness of thought. Then only you can ask the question, what is truth? If you don't understand this, what will happen? If you don't understand that thought is limited, finite, and narrow, what will you do? You will use your thought, isn't it? And you think this is truth, isn't it? That's why in the subsequent sentence in the quote, he say, philosopher is lover of truth, not lover of thought. You understand? If you use thought to develop wisdom, you are dead. You know why, isn't it? But the Buddha say, truth is beyond thought, beyond time, beyond thought. So how can you realize truth using the instrument as thought? That's why all thought-based meditation is dead. You don't stand a chance. So now you follow. Yeah? So you cannot use thought. Your thought is limited, narrow, finite. It's not the awareness. It's not the nature. It cannot understand. It cannot see things as they are. It cannot insight into phenomena to realize the universal characteristic of nature. They are impermanent. They are suffering state and answer. So if you use thought, it becomes knowledge. You understand? Knowledge. So this one, thought, thought equal what? Yeah? Consciousness plus its content. But this consciousness has been shrinked. That's why this one is a very narrow consciousness. So this one is limited. This one, which is thought, is limited. Limited. Finite. And narrow. Narrow. Now you can follow. Yeah? Can you understand? Huh? Now clear. Huh? Yeah. Then I will read on. Then you will understand. So this one is limited, finite, and narrow. Yeah. Not enough space. We have to draw it out nicely. Okay. Okay. Then Krishnamurti said, if you realize that thought is limited, finite, and narrow, then only you can ask the question, what is truth? Means you will know thought is never the truth. Thought is just a thought process, which is not a reality. And that one is knowledge based on memory, based on the past. Can never define the truth, the moment, the reality. Can follow? Yeah. Then the next sentence is the best. After you have realized that, he says, you can ask the question, what is truth? That's why he asks you, is this clear? If you are not clear, you cannot continue. No point. Then he said, with that, I do not accept truth given by philosopher. That is their game. You know what he means? The philosopher that doesn't understand this, that thought is limited, that use thought as knowledge, thinking that that is truth, and tell you all the logic, or the popularly accepted common sense thing, yeah, opinion. So because of that, Krishnamurti said, I do not accept truth given by philosophers. That's their game. Philosophy means the love of truth, not love of thought. Now you understand? That's why all those philosophers who use thought, they are not really developing the wisdom and the understanding. So he continued, he said, so for those who don't use thought, there is no authority. Means I don't want to believe anything. I will understand it through my own investigation, through my own awareness. I will find out. So he said, there is no authority. Means no knowledge from the past, memory. Not somebody tell me. Even if I hear from somebody, I will investigate it. I will examine it. I will find out. I will not believe. That's the reason why during the olden days, they call it the clergy. That time, I think Christianity is not around yet. Because during that time, Socrates' time, it was B.C. The year 400 over B.C. Yeah. 400 over B.C., then he died in the year 399 B.C. He was actually before the Buddha. Just like the Western philosopher, they arise earlier. Then Christ came much later. Oh, sorry. Buddha was 543 B.C., yeah? So the Buddha came earlier, sorry. They came later. They were 300 over B.C. Then only Christ come. 300 over years later, 0 A.D., Christ came. Then the churches start. So before the church, there were this priest, the clergy. They call it the clergy. Yeah. So all these priests, clergy, they tell you, believe. When lightning strike, they say God is angry. That's why they tell you, advise the king and all those things, you must make sacrifice and all those things. Then earlier on in our Dharma class sharing, you remember? One of the king. King what? The king of Kosala. That one, what is his name? Huh? The 16th dream, you remember? Yeah? Then all those non... I don't know how to call them. These are not the real cultivator who understand the dream. They interpret the king's dream differently. They say, you have to make a lot of sacrifice, kill a lot of things to make offering to appease God. So they ask you to believe all this. But the Buddha, with the wisdom and the understanding, knew it is through the condition that all this arise. You don't have to kill people or make offering and sacrifice. These are actually good dreams, good omen, but people cannot understand, interpret it wrongly for the king. So because of that, the belief system that arise create authority on people, put fear on you. You understand? Like you work in a company, yeah? You have your bosses in there, your upline or your what they call superior. They control you in there. They have authority. So they can put fear and harass you. Management by fear and harassment. That's why whatever that has authority can create fear in you. Can force you to obey and other things. Because they have something to hold on you. They put fear in you. That's what authority is all about. So Krishnamurti say, you must not allow authority to suppress your ability to understand things. So he said, because philosophy means love of truth, not love of thought. So there is no authority where you search for truth. Do you understand? You don't have to believe anything. You just have an open mind. Free your mind to search. Do not allow all this dogma, rites and ritual, belief system to condition you, to put fear in you. Otherwise, you can't investigate. You tend to look at the known and ask yourself, how do I begin from that belief system? If you believe from that, you start from that belief system or investigate from belief, that belief system, what if that belief system is wrong? That's why you will deviate. It's just like you go and think and believe. Method and technique is the meditation, and you gullibly believe it is vipassana. You will get into trouble. You will go astray. But when you investigate and come out with your own understanding, then you realize these are method and technique, a series of instructions to do things. Nothing to do with meditation. Nothing to do with vipassana. And what is vipassana also you don't know. That's why you become gullible. You believe people's knowledge, people's views and opinion they put into words and become like authority on you. That's why it comes from their thought, their own idea, their own belief system. So Krishnamurti say, when this is clear, you will have no authority. So there is no authority. That's why he quote Plato, Socrates, Buddha. But he say Christianity has not gone into that very deeply. They have played with words and symbol. Makes a paradoy. Paradi. What is the meaning of this word? Paradi means what? Anybody know this word? Huh? Can somebody Google? What is this word? Huh? If I'm not wrong, should be like make fun of. Huh? Paradi of suffering. Yeah, they like to use this casual. Do you know why they like it? This is how they gain devotees. They gain their followers. If you say you are from the Chinese family, Chinese rite and ritual tradition, or most of them call themselves Buddhists, because being a Chinese, that pray and all those things, they think they are Buddhists. So a lot of them put Buddhists. So the way to bring you over, encounter you, is very easy. Why do you want to believe a system or a religion that just speak about suffering? That this world got nothing better. No love, no meaning. Only suffering. And the worst is Buddhists also agree. Buddhism talk about life is suffering. The Buddha never say life is suffering. The Buddha said in the first noble truth, the prevalence of suffering. There is a noble truth that explains to you what suffering is. Then you don't have the understanding and the wisdom. There are eight realities. When you confront them without understanding and wisdom, it will bring about suffering. And suffering is everywhere, prevalence. But suffering need not be, he said, under the third noble truth. Because under the third noble truth, he said, enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. Suffering need not be when you have this understanding and this realization. That's why the real teaching of the Buddha is very different. But they play with words. So if you are new to the Buddhist teaching or Dhamma and you don't understand, you can become gullible. Is it clear or not? Do you agree with me when somebody come around and tell you, let's say before you know the Dhamma, what religion do you believe in? Or you tell him Buddhism. Oh, what does Buddhism teach? Life is suffering. Because you don't know much about Buddhism. Yeah, life is suffering. This type of religion you want to follow. No love, nothing. My religion is talking about God's love. God's salvation. Understand all? Everywhere is love. The grace of God. Everything is about the good thing in life. That religion talk about misery, suffering. Which one you choose? That's what Krishnamurti mean. Understand not? He say, create a paradigm. What? Paradigm. Paradigm of suffering. And all the rest. But they make use of this. But they say, they are teaching, they didn't go deep enough. Even Chief Reverend also mentioned, that they are happy to stay at the heavenly realm. That's why they talk about the kingdom of God and all these things. Yeah. But certain aspect of Christianity, if you understand the true words of God, I don't know what God, that G-O-D is, but later on I will explain. You can really understand. If you translate that G-O-D to nature, then it match perfectly well. Direct match. If nature is God, then what they say is true. All of living beings we are created in the image of what? Huh? Christianity tell you are created in the image of God. So from nature you come, isn't it? That's why you are created in the image of God. You are part of nature. From nature you come. And then it's correct. Then God is almighty. God knows. Anything you do, God record. What record? Nature's law, understand or not? Law of karma, understand or not? It's not a physical being. It's not an almighty that you think. It is nature with its law that governs life and existence. That's why nothing is apart from nature or from God. So if you truly understand the deep meaning, then you will develop the clear understanding. But you take it literally as a special being that is almighty, then you will have problem because that is limited by your own thought process. Because you are told to believe that there is such a being. But you cannot understand how such a being can manifest and be. Then they say, God is almighty beyond question. You cannot question God. It's just like nature. You cannot question nature. Where nature, what is the truth. Understand not? That's why truth is not your truth, not my truth. Nature's truth. Where nature's law governs, not your truth and my truth. We are talking about relative truth. But when we realize nature's truth, there is only one aspect of truth. Truth is finished. It's just that reality. Nobody in this world or universe can monopolize truth. There is the meaning. Okay? Then now I will go into the interesting aspect of this code, which the lady asked the question. He said, but Christianity has not gone into that very deeply. They have played with words and symbol. Make a parody of suffering and all the rest of it. So the mind rejects all that. So it's clear there. Eh? Then this lady asks, I don't know who is she. Who is she? Dharma friend, I put here. But my wife's iPhone very good now. Got her name out. What? SKE? YKE? Oh, your phone also got? Oh, your phone all very advanced. Mine don't have. Only Dharma friend. I also don't know who is he or she. He said, the original question was good. So there is no authority. Plato, it's called Socrates, Buddha, comma. But Christianity has not gone into that very deeply. They have played with words and symbol. Make a parody of suffering and all the rest. Can you explain what's meant by the statement above? So that question was okay. Then I told her, I said, I will explain it in this coming Tuesday and Thursday classes. Tomorrow, Tuesday class is on as usual. Yeah. Then after that, she asked some more. I think she can't come for the class or don't know. I'm not very sure. He said, thanks, Brother Teo. He said, this one quote Krishnamurti. He said, Krishnamurti said, I do not accept truth given by philosopher. So he go and take that to mean, he went on to say, so there is no authority. Plato, Socrates, Buddha, but Christianity has not gone into that very deeply. They play with words and symbol. Then you know what she interpreted or not. He said, it appears from the above that J. Krishnamurti is saying, Buddha, grouping him with all the other philosophers like Plato and Socrates, has got no authority and is playing with words. See? She got it mixed up. So I replied to her, you got it wrong or mixed up. What J. Krishnamurti mean is Plato, Socrates, and Buddha's teaching are without authority. Means it's not a teaching that is based on a belief in God. as an authority on you, like what Christianity teach. That's why he said, but Christianity has not gone into that very deeply. They play with words and symbols, make a parody of suffering and all the rest of it. We are saying Christianity is a religion based on God's love, whereas the Buddha's teaching is based on suffering, etc. So this is just to explain how this could come about. So now the interesting part is, like what I promised you all, tonight we will have a different sharing. Because this sharing involves Western philosophy. How Western philosophy come about. So today I'm teaching you something different from Buddhism, the Buddhist teaching. And I find this Western philosophy very interesting, even though they come after the Buddha. That's why Jay Krishnamurti is very wise. He included Plato and Socrates and the Buddha into that category of wise people who understand truth, who doesn't cling on to the thought process. That's why he says, so there is no authority. Yeah. And just to brief some of you all, how many of you have read Western philosophy before? Huh? Nobody. You are new. Oh, then very interesting. This is a very nice introduction. And you can go back and Google and find out yourself. According to record, history, Socrates was the father of Western philosophy. You know the father, the original, the first one to actually teach philosophy in the West. And he was so smart, so wise, he was ahead of time. But he came at the wrong time. He came when people don't understand him. So what happened? When he started to teach all these things, only those who are close to him and have affinity, he have faith in him, they understand him. No? And he became popular. No? After he became popular, that's how he get into trouble. Until all those, they call it the clergy, clerical. Because that time Christianity not around that. The churches are not around that. They are called the priests. The priests and the cleric. Or clergy. So they all, jealous of him, told the emperor or the king, this guy is dangerous. He is poisoning the mind of the young people. To think freely. To understand things freely. Because it threatened their traditional belief under Sala. Because the clergy, the priests, they control all these citizens or the masses through what? Through authority. These are like God's word. Because they also have their own belief system. So their word is like final. And they interpret all this through their own views, opinion and idea or whatever that they got it from. Maybe their predecessor or whatever. It's just like during the olden days, you remember? When there is thunder, what does a primitive man say? Initially, they don't know. Then somebody came along. I think God is angry. That's why the thunder is so loud. They don't know what is thunder, so they say God is angry. He's yelling at us. Then when there is flood, there is famine and all the things, God is punishing us. But after you know science, you know you don't need God to create thunder. Understand? You don't need God to change the weather and create all the calamity. We know these are nature's movement. The physical law that manifests. Of course, part of it is due to the consciousness, the nature's law. So all this now scientists have started to develop the understanding. That's why the scientific field, the technical field, has uncovered a lot of dogma, belief system, rite and ritual that cannot stand up to investigation. Even the early days, in the early days, when Copernicus said, our Earth is not the center of the universe. We are but just one planet rotating around the sun. They were scientists at that time. They investigate through their very primitive binoculars and other things, and they can see the movement. And they record all this movement over time. Then they realize all these are planets moving around the sun, just like our planet Earth. And we are not the center of the universe. And because of that, they put them into jail. So like Socrates, also led into jail, because they feel threatened by him. So when they say all those things to the king, or the emperor at that time, the emperor didn't know that they have ulterior motive. So the emperor also feel threatened, because they say, if he poisoned the mind of the young to think, then they may revolt against you and won't recognize you as king. So they put him in jail. Then people protest. The student all protest. Then they got no choice. Okay, to be fair, we trial him. And they trial him. When they trial him, they ask him all those questions. The way he replied, he was so philosophical. Yeah, he understand true. But these people cannot understand, and they refuse to understand him, because they also cannot understand him. So what they did was, they said, no, whatever you say, no use. You are poisoning the mind of the young, is it? You are telling them to do different things. Because we have our government, we have our, they call it the organization of the priests. And it's supposed to be very high, where they are the advisor to the king. So because of that, they tell him, okay, now we give you a chance. We know you are guilty, but we want you to decide your own punishment. He told Socrates, decide your own punishment. And you know what Socrates did or not? He's a wise person. So they thought he will pardon himself and just get this resolved and go. No, he refused. He said, if you don't believe me, then sentence me. That's it. He's not afraid of dying. So you see the picture, the student all plead to him not to do that. But because he want to preserve truth. He want to get people to understand all this. So he is willing to die for what he understands. So it's not a belief anymore for what he understands. So because of that, they seize the opportunity and say, okay, we will sentence you, death sentence. But very, very easy death. They gave him poison to drink. They call it the hemlock. That's why he drank that and he died. And that was his story. And do you know who is Plato? Yeah? So Socrates was, I think, he died at the year 399 BC, if I'm wrong. Yeah? So he must have lived during the 400 BC. This Socrates was the teacher of Plato. And Plato was the teacher of Aristotle. Yeah. And under Plato, Aristotle, and many others, they were all students of Socrates. But this Plato, he was able to escape all those because he was from a very, very wealthy and powerful family. He was from a very, very wealthy and powerful family. So because of that, he has the freedom to write. Then after Socrates passed away, he became very famous. He wrote 36, we call it books nowadays. He wrote 36 scrolls, very long scroll. And all these 36 were the record of Socrates' teaching. He praised Socrates like mad. He said Socrates was the one that gave rise to all this teaching. That's why you see in the Western society, symposium, academy, all this come from Socrates' idea. He proposed the academy for study and all those things. Symposium to discuss things, to examine things, to go against dogma, rites and ritual, belief system. So, father of Western philosophy, Socrates, then even in the scroll that Plato wrote, he re-emphasized the advice from Socrates. He said, all those popular opinion, common sense thing that people believe in, like logic, they are in fact the opposite of truth. Just like what I told you, truth is always the opposite of all this. So he said, forget about all this. Investigate. Find out for yourself all those things that people tell you. That's why this means there is no authority. You don't have to believe anything. You only have to, through your own consciousness, your awareness, your silent mind, investigate into it, just like the Buddha. That's why he said, so the real lover of truth, which is philosophy, they got no authority. They don't believe anything. They just examine, investigate. Through what? Through their awareness. They are not using thought. That's why they are lover of truth. Whatever that points towards the truth, through observation, through examination, through investigation, they accept it. They also talk about the thought, like Krishnamurti. Yeah. Now I show you. But not as deep as Krishnamurti and the Buddha. Socrates' famous verse, or quote, he said, an unexamined life is not worth living. You can understand him or not? He said, you believe all this opinion, common sense, logic, through what? Through your own weakness, your own delusion, your lack of understanding. That's why you depend on people. People tell you there is such thing like God and other things. Then you believe. They're out of fear, you believe, because they say you don't believe. You are a non-believer. The moment you die, you are condemned to eternal hell. So how many of you really want to go to eternal hell? So that fear caused you to do that. So the famous teaching by Socrates, after Plato wrote all this, he said, to overcome all this, you must develop self-knowledge. He said, know thyself. Then you know yourself, just like how I explained to you. Who are you? What are you? How do you know the world? How do you interact with the world? Through the senses. Then how you become like that. And you go and check the internet. Plato wrote this one, he said. When we are, he didn't use the word deluded. When we don't have this understanding, he said, we will be driven by emotion. You know what is emotion, isn't it? Your negativity, your fear, your anger, your hatred, your emotion. And he said it's like a dozen of that type of horse. You know, during, they are the Spartan during that time. Spartan are the very powerful army at that time. They actually conquer the whole of region around Europe. Yeah. They call it the Spartan Empire. Yeah. So it's like a dozen of these horses pulling you along, and you got no way of resisting it. Yeah. He said the only way to free from this monstrous thing is to know thyself, to know how you are drawn into this state of anger, hatred, emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, all these things. Then only you can come out of it. Just like Krishnamurti said, when you understand the limitation of your own thought, the narrowness of your own thought, then you will know how to come out of it. Your thought is not the ultimate answer to truth. Thought is not the instrument to investigate and examine. You must observe through awareness. Just observe. Don't assume. Don't presume. Understand or not? Don't look for thing. Look for thing means you already know what that thing is, then you go and look for it. Do you understand? Means preconceived idea of what that thing is. Then it's from memory. And memory is from the past. It's never new. It's never with the moment. It's never the truth. Never the reality. That's why memory is as dead as the dry leaf of the yesteryears. He didn't even say yesterday. You know, yesteryears. Krishnamurti used this word. That is what memory is all about. It's of the past. As dead as the yesteryears. Yeah. So all this, they already at that time have this understanding. But he came after the Buddha. By that time, I think the East and the West, not much connection. Until the famous Columbus went around the world. Don't know what century, I forgot already. Marco Polo was the land route. But Marco Polo also much later, I think 1300 or 1400 AD. Columbus was earlier, I think. That time, the Spanish Empire and all those things, they sent a lot of ships. They thought the earth was flat. They thought you go to the end of the ocean, you will fall down, a vertical fall. But they keep on sailing. Then Columbus realized the earth was round. It was never flat. Then they cannot understand gravity. When Copernicus say we are a globe, then the Greece, the mythology, the clergy, you know what they say? God created mighty Atlas. You heard the story, Atlas support Earth on this one. So this one, they don't believe. Socrates, Plato, all they know, there is no Atlas down there. It is just Nietzsche's movement. Not Galileo. Galileo later. Copernicus and Galileo, they all realized the movement of the planet later. But during Socrates' time, a lot of things was not known to mankind. But he was the first to tell you, you must know thyself. You must see your own emotion and all those things. And you remember the great story, you know? He was sentenced to jail, isn't it? And you know what his wife did or not? Yeah? His wife always nagged him. He's not complaining. It's the wife that nagged him. Understand? I say so much bad thing about him. Say, stupid fellow. Go against the authority and get into all this trouble. He could have been the advisor to the king. If he only rubbed shoulder with the priest and the clergy. Understand or not? Stupid fellow want to stand out alone and say all the same. So why every time go and nag her? And people ask her, no, you can take it, your wife like that. You know what his answer? You will know his wisdom, how wise he was. You know what he told his student? No? I think she is the one that taught me a lot about patience. Nobody else can teach me patience like her. See? Such a wise person. He never blamed the wife. Yet the wife couldn't understand him. He came for a greater mission. Understand? He has a mission on this earth. That's how he started. The wife is not correct. Selfish. Understand? He cannot understand that the husband is different, talented. Bring this to the world. He has a mission. But the wife cannot understand. It reminds me last time, my mother also uneducated. You know what my mother used to tell us when we were young? Yeah, he saw us very naughty, play around and all those things. He said, you fellows, if you don't study, you become dropout. I tell you, it's a waste of our effort and our hard work. To raise you, give you all the education, and you become like useless. He said, at least you learn from the other families. Child, is it? Don't know how many years old, didn't go to school, is it? Already helping out people. Means you go and help out in the hawker store or what, the shop, like pang kopi, all those things, pong kopi. like serve people, huh? So they pay you 1 month, I think, 10 ringgit at that time. Yeah. 10 ringgit is a lot of money, you know, at that time. Of course, they give you meal. So when he said that to us, you know how was my insight responding a lot? I said, I can't blame her because she got no education. She doesn't understand the importance of education. But at that time, I already knew. I said, it's not what you think. If you have such short-sightedness, you want us not to study, give up study so that less burden on my father. Understand that? So that we can go and bring back some money to the family. No need to go to school, is it? Go and work. 10 ringgit a month. That is good money. But my father different. My father say, no, education most important. The other one is citizenship. He make sure our citizenship paper all in order. That was what my father did. Very good. He make sure we have our citizenship. Then he make sure we have our education. He said, my duty is to get the money for you to study. Don't worry about money. Your duty is just study. See? My father knew how it was like when you are not educated, but he was never educated. He didn't even go to school. He came over at the age of 8 to Malaysia. I remember he told me. He said that time my grandfather was around. But I never get to see my grandfather, where he passed away before I was born. He said the grandfather saw him so young, without education, very dangerous, very deep. So the grandfather sent him back to China. And his good karma. The moment he went to China, Japanese occupation came. Everybody get into trouble. My father escaped. That's why he went back. And my grandfather said, you don't come back until the war is over. You go and study. And he only managed to not really attend school. No. What he did was, he went near the school and listened. No. Listen to what they study, you know. The one that didn't attend school, listening from the side, already learned how to use abacus and all those things, you know, write the Chinese word, read the Chinese word. Some of those attending school are still not able to. That's why with less than 2 years, listening from the side, he came back to Malaysia after the war was over. And from there, because of his little abacus skill in Mandarin, he can read the Chinese paper, he can understand a lot of things, then he emphasized the importance of education. That's what he saw. This is what wisdom is all about. When you see the importance, you will go all out. So, very different from my mother. Both also uneducated, but he is willing to sacrifice. Because that was our parami. My parami. My nature's parami. Yeah, I gave education to my children too. So, I was sent to the best school in Kedah. And my education was taken care of. Yeah. But everything depends on karma. So what is important is I have to move a bit faster, otherwise we won't end. Here, an unexamined life is not worth living. It's just like our Buddhist teaching. Yeah? If you don't have the Dhamma, you come to this world, what did I tell you? You might as well don't come in there. Correct? You don't have the Dhamma means what? You don't understand the Four Noble Truths. You don't even know what is the Three Evil Road. Then what will happen to you, karma wise? You don't even have the teaching. No. You will become heedless. You will do all those funny things. And karma hit back, you will get into big trouble. Understand? So this is more or less similarly like what the Buddha mentioned. He said, an unexamined life means you don't have self-knowledge, the understanding of nature's law that governs life and existence, and you don't know who you are and how you become what you are through emotion and all those things. You cannot reverse all this. Then life is not worth living. Means you are gullible, deluded. You understand? At that time, he can come up with such statement. No? An unexamined life is not worth living. See how wise he is. Then he went on to say the second one. I tell you, you will salute him. Read out to me the second one. True knowledge exists, In knowing that, you know nothing. At that time, he can tell you this all. True knowledge exists only in knowing that you know nothing. Because all of knowing is what? From memory, thought, understand or not? Knowledge. When you know nothing, you know everything. Do you understand? This is what Dhamma is all about. So, true understanding, here, this word should be changed to understanding, exists only in understanding that you know nothing. Because all this thought, which is knowledge through memory, is not wisdom. True wisdom is when you understand you know nothing. When I know nothing, like Krishnamurti say, zero base, you start. Then you can examine, you can observe, you can investigate. If you are with all the knowledge, like some of you all, before you all learn Dhamma from me, you already have your method, technique, vipassana, everything, understand? This will make you very difficult to unload all those things. Because you are not used to a free mind to listen attentively, to investigate. So the conditioning at that time was so strong, so difficult to untie. You remember all those vipassana? Where they think there is vipassana. Nothing, rising, falling, out. But without investigation, without finding out what those things are. So this is very, very beautiful. And this is by Socrates, though. The third one is what? Beware the barrenness of a busy life. You can understand the deep meaning, or not? Barrenness means not fertile, one, isn't it? Correct or not? Barren. Nothing can grow. Nothing can plant. Beware the barrenness of a... What is a busy life? Heedless, lah. Understand or not? Run everywhere, lah. They call in Canada moya moya. Understand or not? You can involve yourself in everything. And they can tell you straight away at that time, you know, before Jesus come, you know, this is about 3,000 years ago. Then the fourth one is even more beautiful. Read out. True wisdom comes to each of us when we realize how little we understand about life, ourselves, and the world around us. And now you understand. This is what existence, life is all about. True wisdom only comes to each of us when we realize how little we understand about life, about ourselves, and the world around us. This is self-knowledge. This is understanding the world, the phenomenal world. At that time, he already has this understanding. Human beings somehow think they're very great. You know? Oh, I got a lot of knowledge. I got a PhD. I got a what degree and what degree. Oh, anything you ask me, I can answer you. Oh, all the quiz and all the debate and all those things. But self-knowledge, wisdom, life, zero. Almost zero. Blank. Who are you? What are you? Can I understand? Then, apart from just life, you yourself also you cannot understand who you are, what you are, how you function as a human. What is consciousness? What is mind? You don't understand. Then, the world around you, you largely don't understand. And he is so wise. So. Then this Aristotle, you know who? He is the great scientist. He is the teacher of Alexander the Great. And this story is very interesting. He is also one of the students of Socrates. You remember Aristotle, no? The father of Alexander the Great was the king at that time. He conquered a lot of country and cities. Then this Aristotle, he came from a rich family. That's why he's very educated. He knows a lot of things. He's very wise. Then this king heard about him. He insists that he teach his son, Alexander, before he become the great later on, took over. Yeah. And he told the king, no. On condition, you pay me a fee. The king said, no problem. Name your fee. You know what he requests from the king? You never expect. My fee, he said, is to free the people of my town. All the people in his town, captured by him. He wants the king to free them. That's why he became very famous. Because he already very rich, he don't need the money. So he want the king to free. And the king was very gentleman. No problem, he said. As long as you teach my son. Yeah, he knew the son must have that education. That's why Alexander the Great become very wise. But he conquered the world. He conquered until he cannot conquer Russia. That's the only thing. Because Russia, too cold and too big a country. You know how the Westerner, when they go into Russia, they always die? They always lost the war. You know what the Russians are good at or not at that time? You study history, isn't it? Ah, good. Scorch and destroy. So, as you go and attack, they get ready all those routes that you go, make sure the food supply all gone. They burn them, remove them. They call it scorch and destroy. So that when your soldier thinking that you have already won, advance until very deep, then the cold winter come. Then you got no food, no supply, cannot go back. That time, they come and attack you. That's how all those who went into Russia feel badly. But now no need to use the soldier. Now one button. Sometimes wireless, no need button. Voice activated. So all this is very beautiful. So this is about Aristotle. So what Aristotle said was very beautiful. He said, it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. Even now, with the Buddha Dhamma, you can't even see this. But at that time, he already knew. You know what is this or not? This is exactly what the Buddha teach. It is the mark of an educated mind, means a wise mind, to be able, I repeat, no wonder I saw this word appearing twice, to be able to entertain a thought, means I can entertain that thought without accepting it. Means you know it's a thought. Thought is a thought. The limitation of thought, the narrowness of thought. Understand? The finiteness of thought. Then you have to see Krishnamurti at another dimension. How thought divide. Understand? And create all those division, duality. So when you can see all this, then the Buddha came out with the teaching, right thought. Understand? Thought is like how I share with you. It's a tool, T-O-O-L, for you to use. Because you are born with a form of mind. Endowed with this body, which is like a vehicle to take you around. Then the mind, which is the consciousness, as a tool for you to live life, to use. So if it's a tool, you use it appropriately, understand? Like a knife. Knife is for you to cut fruit, shape things, and help you to do things. But if you use that knife to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself, and hit out at others, there is the wrong way of using that tool there. So when you understand the limitation of thought, then you can entertain that thought, use it to live life, to arise the right thought for the goodness and the well-being of all, to be a blessing to all, to arise the right wholesome thought so that the merit is wholesome, beautiful, so that it can bring about harmony, love, understanding, compassion, goodness, kindness, gentleness, pleasantness. So all this can come about when you know how to use thought appropriately. That's a right thought. Then you will not accept what thought tell you. Understand? What thought tell you is always knowledge. But in this world, to live life, you have to use thought. Without thought, you cannot live life. That's why there is such thing as Noble Eightfold Path. Right thought, right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought. wrong speech and wrong action. And right effort to abandon all those wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong thought that have arisen. So all these are related to the Buddhist teaching. But at that time, they already know. You must have the ability to entertain a thought without being deceived by it. Without accepting it. You remember Pai and Kathy? Question the thought. The four line of questioning. Is what the thought telling you the truth? The first line of questioning. You always say, yeah, it's the truth. Your thought will tell you what? Take for example, you got a very bad patch with your good friend, or maybe your own spouse. Then the thought tell you, how can you tolerate this guy? Behind your back, he did so many things. And he is not truthful, he is not sincere. You should walk out on him. You should tell him off. So I ask you to question those thoughts. Is it telling you the truth? What will you answer? What will you answer? You will say, it's the truth, isn't it? Will this guy really play me out, isn't it? Can accept or not? Huh? It's very clear, isn't it? You will believe the thought, isn't it? Then the second line of questioning by Bayang Kathy is, you have to re-question that thought. Are you sure that is the absolute truth? You can go and think using your thought again. Then you say, yeah, what? Everything is black and white. Maybe you hire a private detective. Understand or not? And confirm all those things he did to you. So you say, yeah, it's the truth. The third question is a turnaround. Bayang Kathy asks you to reflect. Without believing the thought, how will you behave? Before you have all this wrong thought about what your husband or your wife did to you, you were very loving, isn't it? Very peaceful, isn't it? Life was very good, isn't it? When all these thoughts come in, you become miserable, isn't it? So all this is understanding. What will you be without this thought? Then you will come to realize that all along I was peaceful, loving, having good relationship until this guy did all these things. It may be the reality, understand? But these are wrong thoughts, understand? Why? Because it will make you angry, full of hatred, full of unhappiness. Then you will do drastic things that will bring about misery to both, and even the children suffer. Those that are related to your in-law, everybody will suffer. Means you don't have wisdom to deal with such problem. To deal with such problem is not to believe your emotion, your thought, your anger, your hatred, and react to wrong thought. It's exactly like the Buddha's teaching. So what did the Buddha say? Yeah? How to resolve all this? See things as they are. They are just the way they are. Selfish people, lustful people, they will do selfish things and lustful things. That's why they will do what they believe is correct, based on their views and opinion. So when you accept them for what they are, means you no longer get angry. Then when you understand the law of karma, in the past you could have done this to fellow living beings, then now it's your turn to become the victim. Then you will start to see, this is karma. This is how things has arisen. So what have you got to do with the understanding? That's why the teaching comes, the Buddhist teaching comes. You have to ask for forgiveness. You ask for forgiveness. You have to repent. You repent. Then you determine to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. Follow the advice of the Buddha. Then invoke power of merits to resolve this amicably. So solving it amicably is to follow Noble Eightfold Path. Have right view to accept the reality, then right speech to negotiate or resolve all these things appropriately, amicably. Then arise the right thought, right speech and right action, and right way of living life to resolve all this. And then your problem is solved. Understand or not? Then there is no more anger, no more hatred, no more envy and jealousy and all those negative thought processes which are the root of all evil, make you evil, make you emotional, drawn. That's what wisdom is all about. That's why the philosopher at that time, they already knew all this. Then Plato also got a few very good ones. Plato. He said, know thyself. Then he said, true love is what? Read it out. Where you can admire your girlfriend, your spouse. That is true love. Appreciate what they have done for you. You can admire them for what they are. Instead of just compare. I only love you when you are young, beautiful, and wealthy. When you are no longer young, beautiful, and wealthy, the love fly out the window. That is not love, understand? That's why true love is admiration. When I can admire you for what you are, everything of you, that is love. Where love got no opposite. Yeah. Then the last one is what? Be kind. Why be kind? For everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle, understand? No? You think you only the only one on earth suffer. Everyone is facing life without self-knowledge and understanding. They are worse than you. Don't make them more miserable. Understand? No? That's why be kind, be loving, have virtue, have kindness, have goodness. Can you do that? And say can. Those who have the Dhamma, they will know. Yeah. Why must you get angry and violent with people? Especially to your own children. No point. They are just the way they are. Train them. Guide them. Advise them. Let them decide on their life. Oh, exactly 10:30. So we finish, huh? Okay. You got any question? Anybody got any question to ask? So, tonight, any different? Very good, Western philosophy. I tell you, every humanity on this earth, they have their great beings, understand? They also have their wise people. And without all these wise people, science and maths will not be what it is today. The famous people are all from that Aten, they call it Aten at that time. Aten is what country? Greece. They are very, very wise at that time. Pythagoras is also from there. Newton is also from there. Except Einstein not from there. But last time on all the great scientists, the physics we study, all are from there, most of them. Arquimedes' principle, also from there. The buoyancy force. That has all these signs. Galileo. Not Galileo. Was it Galileo? The one together Copernicus on with the telescope on. Galileo. Because there is one storybook called Gulliver's Travel. Okay, that one is Gulliver's, not Galileo. Galileo is this astronomer. So there are a lot of great beings from that civilization. That's how maths and science came to our world, our education system. You have to thank them, actually. And they are the one that gave us the understanding of nature's law. Even electricity, all the spin of the branch of like nuclear technology and all those things, the breakthrough, now the IT revolution. First we have the agricultural revolution that solved our food problem. Then we have the industrial revolution that solved our jobs problem. Then now we got the high-tech revolution, internet and all those things that solve our speed of doing things. Information technology, data. Now information travels so fast. Artificial intelligence are so much more efficient and accurate than the human being. So computer got no emotion, that's why they are so much better, and they seldom make mistakes unless there is a crash or a breakdown, the hard disk and all those things. Otherwise, they really perfect. You look at calculator, just press the number equal answer come out in split second. So you don't have to, like last time, go and calculate all the mathematics. Then during my time as engineer, we use slide rules because there is no calculator. Later only they allow us to use calculator in the exam final year. Before that, all slide rules. Cannot bring in electronic calculator. So these are the evolution of civilization, the understanding of it. So you have the technical evolution, science, technology, and even mathematics. And I like all these subjects. When I was young, math and science was my favorite. Even geography was my favorite. All my geography subjects, standard three, form three, form five, I score A. That subject like very easy to me. And I like those subjects, and math and science also same. I did very well. Then the spiritual side also same. This nature has the past. That's why you can understand a lot of all these things. So today maybe we will stop at this. Then if you got any question, you can prepare them. Then if you want, you can WhatsApp to the MyKalyanMitra website, or you can WhatsApp to me direct also, no problem. It's up to you. Then we can maybe share it another day. Next Tuesday we reserve for Huirong. Huirong? 够时间吗? Where is she? Oh, in the toilet. Never mind, we ask her later. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits and transfer of merit first. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, you can rejoice. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness, all of the goodness that we have developed over the past to our past. Then we will share and transfer this merit with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasatta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang kantu lokasasana itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Triple Japa, then we end.